From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Hillary Clinton Thursday gave a speech on foreign policy, specifically attacking Trump.
As Secretary of State, Senator, and First Lady, I had the honor of representing America abroad and helping shape our foreign policy at home. As a candidate for president, there's nothing I take more seriously than our national security. I've offered clear strategies for how to defeat ISIS, strengthen our alliances, and make sure Iran never gets a nuclear weapon. And I'm going to keep America's security at the heart of my campaign. Because as you know so well, Americans aren't just electing a president in November. We're choosing our next commander-in-chief, the person we count on to decide questions of war and peace, life and death. And like many across our country and around the world, I believe the person the Republicans have nominated for president cannot do the job. Now imagine Donald Trump sitting in the Situation Room, making life or death decisions on behalf of the United States. Imagine him deciding whether to send your spouses or children into battle. Imagine if he had not just his Twitter account at his disposal when he's angry, but America's entire arsenal. Do we want him making those calls? Someone thin-skinned and quick to anger who lashes out at the smallest criticism. Do we want his finger anywhere near the button? No. Making Donald Trump our commander-in-chief would be a historic mistake, and it would undo so much of the work that Republicans and Democrats alike have done over many decades to make America stronger and more secure. It would set back our standing in the world more than anything in recent memory. And it would fuel an ugly narrative about who we are, that we're fearful, not confident, that we want to let others determine our future for us instead of shaping our own destiny. That's not the America I know and love. So yes, we have a lot of work to do to keep our country secure. And we need to do better by American families and American workers, and we will. But don't let anyone tell you that America isn't great. Donald Trump's got America all wrong. We are a big-hearted, fair-minded country.
For more on that, we spoke with our political analyst, Professor Tony Montero, via Skype Friday morning.
Tony, welcome back. An interesting speech from Hillary Clinton yesterday.
Definitely. Very interesting.
She calls Trump essentially irresponsible and not properly tempered to conduct foreign policy. And this is someone who laughed over the murder and rape of a foreign leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think we're getting really down to what the election could be about. And that is, in broad terms, the American empire. What Hillary Clinton is saying is that we have to preserve and deepen the American empire and its military aggression and defense of the global order where the United States is hegemonic. What Trump is saying, we can't afford the empire. We have to draw back. The other thing is that she is upholding and Trump is opposing that policy, which goes back to the Nixon-Kissinger days. That is the strategic policy of keeping China and now Russia, which was then the Soviet Union, separated. And the United States, over a long period of time, having allied with China. However, today we see China and Russia in a strategic alliance, and as Hillary Clinton points out in her foreign policy speech, that is considered a threat to American hegemony. In this respect, Donald Trump's position, and he has been consistent on this, and I think we should take him seriously on this. He is for what some decades ago we used to call peaceful coexistence. His policy would privilege economic relationships between nations who differ on their political systems, in many ways on the economic systems and policies. He is saying we should establish economic relationships, business relationships, rather than relationships of hostility and hegemony. In this respect, Donald Trump represents, and this is ironic, a force for peace as opposed to the prevailing policies, bipartisan policies of Democrats and Republicans.
Rolling. So Trump has been looking at and talking about NATO as overhead, basically, and likewise the relationship with Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, the basing of all kinds of military assets there as overhead, saying that he wants the locals to pick up some of the cost. And one of the things that seems to get lost on people here is the fact that each of those countries has very strong, active anti-war movements. And so as the pain of paying for that military protection, quote unquote, gets shifted onto the populations there who were already suffering austerity in many cases, you're going to see major pushback that may not be politically, well, certainly hasn't happened in the United States.
Yes. Well, and that's absolutely true, which indicates the fact, I think, that the anti-war movements are also becoming movements that are merging with the anti-austerity drives in Europe and now in the United States. And that's what I think, in a very profound sense, the Trump and Sanders movements represent, a coalescing, a synthesizing of anti-war, anti-military spending with anti-austerity movements. And on the positive side, with the demand that rather than spend these trillions of dollars on defending the American empire and bringing nations to heel, people are objectively saying we should rebuild this country. And therefore, the claim, again, the claim that Trump is the fascist, I think, is putting the shoe on the wrong foot. Because it's, in the final analysis, a fascism, as we think about it and as they're using it towards Trump, is incorrect. It fits Hillary Clinton because fascism means war in the end and world war. And I think a number of commentators are now concluding, and I agree with this, that the greatest threat to world peace is Hillary Clinton and the forces around her. Another way of putting it, that the greatest threat of nuclear war comes from within the Democratic elite and from within the Democratic Party, who hide their dirty and bloodied hands behind identity politics and so-called cultural issues. It is the greatest disingenuousness and bad faith in politics that probably any nation has ever seen. Hillary Clinton is a complete fraud. If she is elected, and or if she even gets the nomination, the world moves closer to war, and as the Russians see it, world war.
You know, it's beyond ironic, but lost on most Americans, that her performance with the killing of Muammar Gaddafi does not, you know, removes any credentials she might have as someone who is an anti-Islamophobe and also an anti-racist fighter. Muammar Gaddafi was mm-hmm. both an Arab leader on the one hand mm-hmm. and a Muslim, and also, though, the kings, the traditional kings of Africa, elected him as an African, as the King of Kings. I mean, he has African credentials like very few people on the planet had.
Yeah.
And,
yes,
and she was responsible for his murder by designing the policy that led to it, and then gloated about it on television.
Yeah, yeah. And more than that, you know, her position on Syria. As everyone now knows, Syria is a proxy war in preparation for war with Iran. She has the hardest line on Syria. With respect to Ukraine, with respect to the extension of NATO further into Eastern Europe and into the Baltic states on the northern part of Russia. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton is a warmonger, and there's no way to get around it. Donald Trump is trying to pull back from the policies of aggression when he says, I can do business with Putin. I can negotiate with the leadership of North Korea about a real peace treaty and reuniting the Korean Peninsula. When he says that he wants to withdraw our nuclear forces from Northeast Asia, when he refuses to endorse the Nixon-Kissinger policy of keeping Russia and China at odds. I mean, he is talking about a whole new reality, an anti-Pax Americana, a new paradigm for America's relationship with the world. He's against so-called regime change and nation building. He opposes the positions of the neocons of the past, the position in Iraq and Libya, but he also opposes the more contemporary neocons who are focusing their attention upon regime change in places like Russia and Venezuela. There's no way, if one looks at the objective realities of what each, at least Hillary and Trump are saying, there's no way that we could define Trump as a threat to world peace and a fascist. If anyone is a threat to world peace and a fascist, it's Hillary Clinton.
You know, you mentioned the elites that have this policy consensus, and it was jeopardized a little by the buildup behind Sanders some, even though he hadn't articulated much in terms of deviation from the policy. The idea that a quote-unquote socialist was getting lift has all kinds of implications, including foreign policy ones. And Sanders mm-hmm. voted against the Iraq War, so, you know, he will go off the reservation from time to time. But he didn't really take it anywhere where there was a substantial, substantive difference between what he was saying and Clinton and Obama and Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. Trump has done that and gives Sanders the space to do it, and he hasn't really taken that yet. But they have Clinton in there anyway, blocking that possibility. How do you wrangle some kind of consensus among the electorate for this foreign policy change?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just with respect to Bernie Sanders and the way he's positioning himself on foreign policy, it seems that in order for him to push a radical reformist position on domestic policy, he has to stay close to the Democratic Party's elite on foreign policy. I think it's totally incorrect. I think you cannot separate foreign policy and military spending questions from anti-austerity questions, from questions of rebuilding the domestic economy and the infrastructure. So I think Bernie Sanders is making a huge mistake. And as we know, besides, you know, going off the reservation, let us say, on the Iraq war, he was on the reservation on other questions, such as the drone wars, and he's still on that reservation. And some of the statements that he has made about, for example, Hugo Chavez and the Venezuelan Bolivarian Revolution puts him in terms of foreign policy position very close to Hillary Clinton. And that is unfortunate. And therefore, Trump stands out so strikingly by the fact that he breaks completely with the neocon consensus on foreign and trade policy. And therefore, and again, irony of ironies, Trump, the billionaire businessman, the anti-politician, is to the left of all of the other candidates, and I would say has taken positions that even few in the left have taken publicly. So I think Trump is playing the role of a spearhead that is disrupting the normal pattern of foreign policy discussion and policies. And so that has to be known and it has to be heard. I think the left and progressive forces have to come to their senses about what is what in this election.
You know, you have lots of folks considered to be on the left organizing, and some who are clearly on the left, but they're organizing protests primarily at Trump rallies. Some of them also protest Clinton, but, you know, their presence at the Trump rallies swells the anti-Trump protesters' ranks and lends left credibility to it. And yet no one's really discussing this major core of the difference in the platforms or the articulated, to use that word loosely, program of the candidates. And I'm wondering, how are we going to force this discussion of foreign policy into the broad discussion and onto the agenda of the left?
Well, first of all, I think Trump needs to be protested for certain statements that he has made about Central American immigrants and Mexicans in particular that are racist, certain statements about Muslims that are Islamophobic. And I think some of his language with respect to women is misogynist. And that has to be protested and attacked as such. But then if we're talking about foreign policy, we have to look at what he is saying. And the left has to enter the arena of real politics. That means that politics is a struggle of ideas and it's a struggle for power. It is the establishment of strategic blocks, of unity around things that people can agree to and struggle around things they can't agree to. In this instance, we are looking at a crisis of unparalleled dimensions of the American ruling elite and of the American electoral political system and the major force driving that crisis within the ruling class is the rogue, that rogue personality, that guy who is a rogue within the ranks of the ruling class who is taking another a line. In fact, a line diametrically opposed to their foreign and trade policies. This is something that perhaps we have never dealt with, certainly in my generation. And as I look at history, in the history of the country, the closest thing perhaps would have been Theodore Roosevelt when he broke with the Republican Party and ran as an independent. But I think this goes way beyond that. So the left has to look at things in a large sense, in a historical sense, and we have to look basically even beyond the elections themselves and see how what is going on now impacts the configuration of power and class and ideological relationships in this country. What this crisis means in terms of a new politic, a new configuration of progressive class and radical forces, that is what we have to keep our eye on. And I think, and we've said this before, and I think you and I agree upon this, that the target of the anti-war, anti-austerity, anti-trade policies, the target has to be Hillary. And I just like to quote a friend of mine, Mumi Abu-Jamal, who recently said in a private conversation, if the price to bring down the Clintons is Donald Trump, so be it. I agree with that. Because what the Clintons represent is perhaps the most reactionary militarist forces within the ruling class of this country.
You know, looking at that and looking forward and looking beyond the election, basically what's being sold by the Democratic Party, the elite of the Democratic Party, and bought by many of the Democratic Party, you know, people on the street, is the idea that if you elect Trump, you're going to have a racist regime. You know, the chaotic foreign policy, I don't think, resonates with the left. And if you elect Clinton, you'll have to organize against her as a you know, war type president. But you won't have to worry about the racist aspect, which, of course, is misguided given the previous Clinton administration's experience. But what they're saying basically is we don't want to organize against racism under a Trump presidency, but we'd prefer to organize an anti-war movement against the Clinton presidency. But actually, that won't play out, will it?
I don't think so. And I think there's something wrong with the argument, because it assumes that somehow Clinton is a anti-racist and pro-black and pro-immigrant and so on and so forth. And that's absolutely untrue. If you look at the policies of her husband, and she was a part of that administration. And if you look at statements that she had made about young black people as predators who had to be brought to heel, it's not true. I think that we are in a period where it's very difficult to predict, just like we could not predict that you would have a candidate like Trump running on literally a peace, anti-war platform relative to what the ruling parties have put forward. So I don't think it's a certainty that a Trump administration would be any more racist than a Clinton administration, or that a Trump administration would in substantive matters be any more anti-black working class, anti-brown working class, anti-working class period than the Obama administration or the Bush administration. So I think Trump is unpredictable. He is responding to a mass movement. He says it himself. He listens to what people say, and he thinks it through, reflects upon it, and it becomes a part of his general campaign oratory and rhetoric. So I'm not convinced that the pattern of institutional and structural racism and violence that occurs under Democratic and Republican presidencies will necessarily or inevitably be the case under a Trump administration.
And then the dynamic in the aftermath is quite different as well. We've seen under Democratic administrations, anti-racist organizers are by themselves working on their issues. Mm-hmm. And when there's a Republican mm-hmm. president, suddenly the Democrats are standing next to them. The anti-war right. movement, we saw the same thing. So actually, in terms of pushback, there probably would be more pushback against Trump than against Clinton, more effective pushback.
Yeah, that's a possibility. And there's a possibility that Trump, under this a barrage against him, claiming he's a fascist and a racist, might make some serious tactical changes in his oratory and rhetoric towards an anti-racism, as he would understand it. I think that when you see austerity itself, what it institutionalizes is a system of racist economic and social relationships. Mm-hmm. That's what austerity means. It means that the people who, because of race, have been historically at the bottom are kept there and pushed further down. An anti-austerity program objectively creates conditions for the opposite. I'm not saying it would inevitably do so, but it creates conditionalities for the opposite of a policy of aggression and empire and hegemony by its very nature is racist, is white supremacist. To justify it, as we have seen, there is an appeal to white supremacy. And I think the case of Libya and Muammar Gaddafi, an African, a leader of the Pan-African movement on the continent, was demonized in racist and white supremacist ways by the Obama administration and certainly by Hillary Clinton. So when Trump says he wants to draw back from that, it creates conditions for foreign policy that is not reliant upon white supremacy and white supremacist arguments to carry it forward. So there are possibilities in this Trump thing that we have to see and take advantage of. This is not to say in any way that we should allow Trump to be given a free pass and to be able to say whatever he wants to about Muslims and immigrants and so on and so forth. But at the same time, we have to understand this moment and what it portends in the sense of possibilities to move forward. And among those possibilities are the joining of the Trump movement and the Sanders movement into a common anti-austerity, anti-war, anti-militarist policy. I think that is what is possible. I think in the movement, both sides are recognizing that they see themselves in the other. I think this is a great time. I think the left, as we define ourselves, for the most part, are way behind the curve. We have not caught up to what this moment portends for the emancipation of the people, and especially of the poor and working people.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.